I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the intersection of politics and faith. Former United States Senator John Danforth, a Republican from Missouri, has written a book, The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics, that challenges both the left and the right. Danforth is coming to Indianapolis this weekend to talk about the book's themes, one of which is that people of faith could reintroduce some humility into a political process that seems to need it. We'll talk with John Danforth in advance of his weekend visit. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today with former United States Senator John Danforth. He's also a former United States representative to the United Nations, a lawyer and an ordained Episcopal priest. He has a new book out called The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. He's going to be talking about that and also taking part in services this weekend at Trinity Episcopal here in Indianapolis. He's joining us by phone from New York, even though his home is in St. Louis. Senator Danforth, thank you for joining us today.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
It's good to have you. I should start by saying I enjoyed your book.
Thanks.
I thought that it was a thoughtful look at, I guess it's really a couple of subjects that are not effortless these days for people to discuss. And I want to talk first. I do want to discuss the themes because I think there's a lot in here that will stimulate thought, but I'd like to start first with sort of the genesis of the book. What prompted you to write it?
About 10 years ago, I wrote a book called Faith and Politics, and that book was showed concern about the entanglement of religion and politics and how religion could be used politically to divide us as a kind of a wedge, and the prevalence at that time of wedge issues in American politics. But this book is a bit different, and it's prompted by the dysfunction of today's politics in America, especially dysfunction in the Congress, and it asks the question, if you are a faithful person and you're concerned about the direction of American politics and the dysfunction of American politics, what can you bring to this situation that is more healing and that makes things better than they are now? It's not at all an argument for one particular political point of view, certainly not for any party or any candidate. It goes more to the tone of American politics and the dysfunction of politics and what religious themes could be brought to bear on that problem.
Yes, there's a significant amount of discussion in the book about the themes of humility, of sacrifice, of religion's call for people to devote themselves to a larger purpose than simple self-interest or simply understood self-interest. And, you know, it is not a book in that way that is likely to completely please either side of the political divide. Although I've got to say, the folks who probably are going to be the least pleased with it are going to be the followers of Ayn Rand and libertarians. You do not have particularly uplifting things to say about them and their notion that that politics really is naked self-interest.
Right. We've been, ever since the writing of our Constitution, we've been realists about human nature. We've been realists about interests and people being out for their own interests. This is why we had the system of checks and balances, and that was the genius of James Madison to be realistic about the interests and to balance them against each other so that there wouldn't be just a dominance by one side over everybody else, the so-called tyranny of the majority. But from the beginning, there was a concern that we had to be something more than just people with self-interest to check them against each other. And Madison himself talked about the importance of what he called virtue. And the first four presidents all talked about virtue. And that meant that, you know, in addition to concern about ourselves, we were concerned about the common good. So virtue to the early presidents meant more than personal ways of deportment, but also commitment to the good of the whole, the common good. And Madison said that without that, without virtue, we were really not going to have a good future at all. So we were dependent on virtue. That concept of virtue, of the common good, pretty well faded out with our first four presidents, with a few times that it cropped up again, most notably in Kennedy's inaugural speech, where he famously said that we should ask what we could do for the country, and he said that Americans would pay any price and bear any burden for the defense of liberty. But that's about the last time we heard that from any politician. And now politics is exclusively about, you know, politicians say, how can I pander to your self-interest? And what they hear from the public is, don't ever increase any tax burden, don't ever cut any benefit. And the result of that is a national debt that's now closing in on $20 trillion. So if we're going to regain the notion of virtue, the notion that, you know, we have greater goods to serve than simply our own economic interests, where is that message going to come from? And what I argue in the book is that it's an expressly religious message. This is something that religion says. It says that we as individuals are not the be-all and end-all of what's important, and that there are goods higher than ourselves. And that, I think, is one of the important messages that faithful people can bring to politics.
This is there are other people who have written on the theme of sort of the explosion of a very expanded notion of individualism and individual rights on both the left and the right these days. At what point, A, do you think that balance, and it's always been there as part of our history, I mean, there's always been a balancing act between rights and responsibilities and the greater good and preserving the rights of the minority or the individual. At what point do you think the balance began to shift to the point where, you know, as you argue in the book and have just argued, that the whole idea of sacrificing for the greater good became something that was no longer either feasible or considered acceptable as a political argument?
Well, I think it's been some time now. Back 21 years ago, I was the vice chair of what was called the Kerry Danforth Commission. It was appointed by President Clinton, and the idea was to look at the entitlements, especially Social Security and Medicare, and come up with, you know, ways to fix the entitlements so that they would be sustainable over the long run. And even then, it was said that Social Security in particular is the third rail of politics. Don't do anything about it, don't say anything about it, or you're dead. And the result is that nothing has been done. We came out 21 years ago with this strong case that the entitlement programs were not in good shape and they couldn't be sustained. And yet, in 21 years, absolutely nothing's happened. Then 5 years ago, there was the Simpson-Bowles Commission, which had to do with the budget and the national debt, and which came out with a balanced program of entitlement adjustments and taxes to put us on a sound path going forward with regard to the economy. And again, nothing happened of that. In fact, people who advocated the Simpson-Bowles report were attacked in their political campaigns. So this has now been with us for some time, and I'm not unrealistic. I know that all of us are interested in ourselves, but the message now in politics is exclusively the message of self-interest, and it's what the politicians are hearing from the people, and it is what the politicians are then repeating back to the people in sort of a pandering fashion. So there we are.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with former United States Senator John Danforth about his new book, The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, in this section of the country, obviously that balancing act between faith and politics kind of exploded or tipped over completely. Earlier this year, we had a huge controversy in Indiana about a proposed Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA we call it, here, that still remains a divisive issue. Just across the state line, we've got a county clerk who's made national news by refusing to, affix her signature to marriage licenses for same-sex couples. Can you talk about, how people of faith might conduct themselves? I use the word might there rather than should, because I know in the book you attempt not to dictate how they might conduct themselves to help resolve rather than exacerbate situations such as that.
Well, I think that the situation in Kentucky is a little bit different from the RFRA-type question. And let me just say, as far as the Indiana proposition is concerned, I'm not any expert on that. I know something about RFRA at the federal level. Mm-hmm. But on the Kentucky situation, if a person is elected to an executive office in government, then the duty of that person is to enforce the law, whether he or she happens to agree with the law. You take an oath to execute the law to the best of your ability. And so I don't think that people should be able to just say, well, I'm an elected official and I happen to have a different position from what the law says, and therefore I'm not going to enforce it. On the general question of RFRA, the Supreme Court has said that as far as religious actions are concerned, the government has the power to trump religious actions. And for example, even if some religions believe in polygamy, we're not going to practice polygamy And the Supreme Court has said that in that sort of activity, the government can trump religion. My own view is that where there are minority religious positions and people in good faith feel strongly about their religious beliefs, we should, where possible, accommodate those beliefs and those practices. So it's a matter of deference.
Senator Danforth,
we can do it, and we can't always do it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to do it, for example, with regard
Senator Danforth, we got to go to a break real quickly. We are talking with Senator John Danforth about his new book. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking with former United States Senator John Danforth. He's a Republican from Missouri. He's also a former U.S. representative to the United Nations, a lawyer, and an ordained Episcopal priest. He's going to be in town this weekend, taking part in services and speaking at Trinity Episcopal here in Indianapolis, and he has a new book out called The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. Senator Danforth, I apologize. We were headed to a break there, and I think I cut you off in midstream. You were talking about the intersection, really, between duty to faith and duty to office, and I want to make sure that you have a chance to complete your thought.
No, I think I pretty well completed it. I said if you're elected to public office, and especially executive position, your responsibility is to enforce the law, whether you happen to agree with it or not.
How did your faith, I mean, you are an ordained Episcopal priest, inform your service? I mean, you were in addition to being, a senator from the state of Missouri and representative of the United Nations, you were also Attorney General for the state of Missouri. You know, did your faith ever come in conflict with what the duties you were required to perform as a public official? And if not that, how did your faith inform the way you approached your office?
There are a lot of people, both on the left and the right, who believe that there is a direct connection between their religious beliefs and their positions on public issues. And on the left, there are people who believe that their concern about helping the poor and the underprivileged leads directly to their support for various, say, spending programs. On the right, there are people who would say that their religious beliefs lead directly to their positions on certain social issues. I think, in my own mind, drawing that direct linkage is something I could not do and think that we should not do, because once you say, well, my side on a political issue is God's side, mm-hmm. That forecloses any kind of discussion. It forecloses any idea of compromise, which is the nature of politics. It makes politics unworkable. So I think it's very important to have a very healthy amount of humility in the way you go about politics, and certainly that you don't purport to believe that, you know, my way is God's way. There's a big difference between religion and politics, and it's important to keep that difference in mind.
And part of what you discuss in the book is that spirit of humility. I read that, and correct me if I'm wrong, as in some ways a response to much of the stridency that you see with religious themes once they get introduced into the political arena. Is that a concern that you want at some level people of faith who enter the process to tone down the rhetoric a little bit and perhaps approach with what you call a greater spirit of humility?
Yes, I think that, and the title of the book is The Relevance of Religion, and I think the relevance of religion to politics has to do with tone, it has to do with approach, and we should be very wary of thinking that there's a direct connection between our religion and our positions on issues, because positions on issues are usually and almost really almost always debatable, and good people and faithful people are all at all points on the political spectrum, both political parties. So I think humility is very, very important. I don't think that religion gives us a blueprint for political positions. I do think religion is offers very important messages for how we go about politics in America. And I think that it's important for people to present an alternative voice to the voice that's now out there in the public, which seems to be that we're really a bunch of selfish people. We want to grab everything we can for ourselves. We are given toward hateful thoughts about other people, and we never want to compromise. And that's where I think we are largely in American politics right now, and I think that there is a counter voice that's very important, and that it is a natural message to come from faithful people, but it doesn't pertain to how you should vote on this piece of legislation or that piece of legislation.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with former United States Senator John Danforth about his new book, The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Senator Danforth, you also talk in there about how faith might be a place of reconciliation for people who have different views. And you talk about sort of the fellowship that seems to have disappeared among members of Congress. It's a theme that that listeners of this program have heard. We have done shows recently with former Indianapolis Mayor William Hudnut, who also served in Congress and became very close friends with Bill Hudnut. Was a Republican, is a Republican, and one of his good friends for the rest of his life was former United States Representative Andy Jacobs Jr. They were very, very close friends. And not only was Andy Jacobs a Democrat, but they ran against each other twice and somehow emerged from that competition as bosom buddies. You talk about how we have lost something precious when we lose those kinds of relationships. Could you talk about that a little bit?
I think that's true. I think that one thing that's happened in the Senate is these personal connections have disappeared. I was told by one current member of the Senate that the senator couldn't think of more than a half a dozen members of the Senate to ask over for dinner. And it's important to have interpersonal relationships if you're going to try to work things out. And if you believe that politics isn't about just my way or the highway, but that politics is about trying to work things out, then getting to know people on a basis other than just as a political ally or opponent is really important. the way the Senate schedule works now, the constant campaigning, and the, you know, my side versus your side always, the bipartisanship is something that's fallen apart. I think that we've really lost something in the personal relationships.
We are talking with former United States Senator John Danforth. He's a Republican from Missouri. He's written a new book, a fascinating new book, called The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. And you can do what Joe has done here. Give us a call at 866-476-3881 and join the conversation. Joe, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, John. Have a general question, hyphenated between those two words. It's almost like this country has lost sight of context. Whenever we're talking politics, there's no context beyond what happened in the last week or the last month. It's totally, it's like we're wearing blinders. We take no lesson from what history has shown us as to how we can solve problems, whether they are solvable. It's just total dogmatism. Any comments, Senator?
Thank you very much for the call and the question, Joe. Senator?
I think that you hear this really expressly, in particularly in my party, the Republican Party now, where people say, as recently as, 10 months ago or so, Republicans gained total control of the Congress, and they haven't repealed Obamacare yet, and they haven't defunded Planned Parenthood, so we're really mad. And I think to be angry that that government doesn't turn on a dime misses the point of how government functions. It doesn't turn on a dime. And the way Congress was created was that it shouldn't turn on a dime. It was a place where people with various points of view and various interests that they represented brought those points of view, brought those interests into a process where there would be people who disagree with you, and you just saw whether you could work it out or not. So I do think that the people who take the position that I'm right, you're wrong, here are my non-negotiable demands, do not have a sense of how the system was designed to work.
You, in the book, tell stories about two sort of masters of, and I'm using that as a complimentary term, not as a pejorative, of Senate procedure, Russell Long and Robert Dole. And if there is a theme that links the two of them and the stories you tell about them, is that they were both seemed to be quite good at making sure that as many people as possible had a seat at the table, and that they all had an opportunity to kind of buy into the process or feel that they were part of it. That sort of presumes that they believed that the process should be one in which differences are reconciled rather than exacerbated, and that it's less about winning and losing and more about sort of a problem-solving approach. At what point, that's not really the model in Congress right now, at what point did that begin to break down? Because, you know, Robert Dole is a very recent figure in American history. You know, when did we begin to lose that sense of what should be our deliberative body stop being deliberative?
This is a major change. I'm not sure that it occurred in, you know, a particular year, but I do think this is something that has definitely changed in the last couple of decades. It's clearly different from when I was in the Senate. And I think that it pertains to what politicians politicians are hearing from the so-called base of their party, then what they are hearing is, we don't want you to compromise. We don't want you to talk to people in the other party. We don't want you to work things out. We have the non-negotiable demand. And you're hearing it now in the Republican Party, my party, with regard to the selection or lack of selection of a Speaker of the House. Mm-hmm. The Republicans in the House are so dysfunctional, they can't even elect a Speaker. And the reason they can't, just according to, you know, stories in the media, is that members of the House, Republicans in the House, are being told, if you vote for this person or that person, if you vote for McCarthy or if you vote for Paul Ryan, then we will oppose you in the next primary election. So it's the uncompromising message that politicians are hearing from the activists in their parties that's causing this. I don't think that that is a message that most Americans share. I don't think most Americans believe that politics is a matter of non-negotiable demands, but it is clearly a message that's being heard by people who are in the House right now.
We are talking with former United States Senator John Danforth, who has written a new book called The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I got two quick comments, and then I'd like Senator Danforth's comment on my question. First of all, I'm a big believer in separation of church and state, and but I don't believe, I think what's happened in America, we've taken that to separate man from God. And what my concern is that what's happening is back to the obeying the laws of the land. The federal government is, if you're a Christian and you take what's considered a Christian stand, they will use the law against you. However, we can have people, sanctuary cities, immigrants here that are totally illegal, and we won't even pursue the correction of that law. And it's just, and so when you talk about the congressman being dysfunctional, people like me in America, it's time for them. They are my civil disobedience. I can't get out march and do anything effective, but I can elect for people that will go in there and refuse to bend. Well, it's selective what we enforce as far as laws, and if it's a Christian, it's always, the law is always used against them. If it's another situation where it's a liberal view, like immigration or homosexual, whatever, we won't use it. We won't use the law. We just say, well, you have to obey the law.
Dave, I'm going to step in here because we've got just about a minute till break,
sure,
and I want to give Senator Danforth a chance to respond. Thank you very much for the call and the question.
Thank you,
Senator Danforth.
I am a believer, of course, I think almost all of us are, in the separation of church and state. But that does not mean that religious people just sort of check their religion at the door of their church. It clearly informs how they think about things and how they function, although I do not think that it directs how what their positions are on particular points of view. That would be sort of my comment on at least the first part of the questioner's point.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with former United States Senator John Danforth about his new book, The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. He's going to be speaking about it and taking part in services this weekend at Trinity Episcopal Church here in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking with former United States Senator John Danforth. He's also former United States Representative to the United Nations and a lawyer and an ordained Episcopal priest. In addition to that, he's also an author. He's got a new book out called The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. He's going to be talking about that book and also taking part in services at Trinity Episcopal Church this weekend. I should say, this is the official publication date, isn't it, Senator Danforth?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we are getting this fresh from the front lines of the news. We've gotten an email from a listener named Mike. And if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Mike says, I'm enjoying today's discussion. My take is that none of these views or perspectives is particularly dependent on having any particular belief or creed. They apply to the increasing nones as well. That said, politics rarely attracts those that are not driven by self-interest or self-aggrandizement. Reasonable people don't seem to engage with elected public service and get trampled when they do. Senator Danforth, that's more an observation, obviously, than a question, but it's one we've heard before, that people who aren't necessarily particularly balanced are the ones who get drawn to running for public office, present company excluded, of course.
I think that, you know, it's really interesting when people who are sort of on the, what you could call the fringes of political ideology, the people who are sort of out there and with the sharpest views, claim that they represent the silent majority. I think they represent the loud minority. And I think that most people in America are not angry people. They're not bitter people. And some of these politicians say, well, there's a lot of anger out there. If you think you're angry, I'm even madder than you are. I think most people are not that way. I think most people believe in their country. I think most people are realistic about what government can do and what it can't do. They want the country to succeed. I think most people would be receptive to an appeal on let's get our act together with regard to the federal budget. I think most people believe in compromise and getting things done, and they need to be heard. And that really is the appeal of the book. Mm-hmm. And it's an appeal to all of us. I think that it's a natural message that comes from people of faith. I think that is very closely related to what believing people believe. But I don't think it's unique to people who are religious faith. I think it would apply to a lot of people who are nuns, who are realistic about government, who believe in their country, and think that we just better get on with the show rather than this constant, endless fighting that we're involved in right now.
I'm trying to think of the name of the late British writer who referred to, you know, something he had written as an act of patriotism, even though it was a form of protest, and he referred to it as a lover's quarrel with his country. How much of this book is a lover's quarrel with your party? Because there is a call for moderation. You talk in the book about places where you think the Republican Party is going to do significant damage to its long-term prospects. And I'm assuming, having read the book, that, you know, the rise of Donald Trump is possibly the face of the Republican Party is not something that would entirely please you.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, I am a I am a Republican, always have been. I consider myself to be a traditional Republican. I have sort of the usual Republican positions on taxes and spending and the size and the power of government and national defense and foreign policy and international trade and so forth. So that is what I am. But I think that there are elements in the Republican Party that have presented themselves as being hostile, mad, even hateful, and uncompromising. And I think that's a mistake for my party, and I think it's not good for the country.
We are talking with former United States Senator John Danforth, who's written a new book, The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I really welcome, Senator Danforth, your voice on all of this. I tend to vote Democrat more often than not. I was born and raised Catholic, participated as a young man in not one, but two abortions. I'm an attorney at law, 64 years old, and I've grown to regret the participation from a moral perspective. But I have no need, and don't think it would be good for me to impose my now changed morality on that issue, so that the law of the land reflects it. In other words, you don't need to believe as I do. I think Roe versus Wade happens to be the correct statement of the law, at least it remains so today. I have no problem with that. I'd like to think my own actions would be different than that if I had it to do over again. And I guess this would translate to those that oppose same-sex marriage. Whether I oppose it or not, you know, I don't see that I compromise my religious views or my moral views if I bake a cake or rent a hall to two people that want to be married. So your position on all of this, I think, is wonderful. My legal stance doesn't have to align with my own personal moral conduct code, is what I'm saying.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Stephen.
Thank you.
Thanks. Senator Danforth, that's one of the themes of the book is in effect that in political life one should render under Caesar. What is Caesar's, that there is a duty. We talked a bit about that with Kim Davis in Kentucky. Can you talk about that line that really divides issues of conscience and, you know, what is one's duty to the community once the community has made a decision?
There are some issues about which good people have very strong feelings, but they are no longer viable political issues. They're not going to be successfully fought in politics. And therefore, if people want to pursue those issues, rather than trying to win and getting the law changed, pursue them in your churches, in your homes, in your communities as matters of moral position, but not just fighting what have to be losing battles in politics. And when you fight them, they'll just be very divisive to no end. Two of those issues are the ones that the caller mentioned. With regard to abortion, and my history is pro-life, but that issue is not going to prevail politically, because since 1973, when the Supreme Court decided Roe versus Wade, the Supreme Court took it out of politics. So even if you persuaded a state legislature to outlaw abortion, abortion is going to be available because the Supreme Court says so. On the question of gay marriage, politically, it's over. And it's over, particularly as older people, people in their 70s and 80s, who are not homophobic. They just never really even thought that marriage could be on a same-sex basis. Well, as they get older and pass from the scene, and younger people who just assume that this is okay, it's politically it's over. It's not gonna come back. So I think that it's a mistake to try to win every battle politically if they're really not winnable. So make your case in churches, make your case in a community, but let's not constantly be fighting legislative battles on matters that will not be won legislatively.
We are talking with former United States Senator John Danforth about his new book, The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have just one question. Didn't Mitch McConnell really set the stage for much of the current problem when he made the statement on more than one occasion that his main goal was to make sure that Barack Obama did not get reelected?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Richard.
I'm a friend of Mitch McConnell's. I served with Mitch in the Senate. I think basically Mitch is a let's make the system work kind of a senator. I think that if he made that statement, I did not hear it, but if he did make that statement, that's not helpful. I think that we should at least try to find out if there are things that we agree on that we could work on between the two parties rather than just the big issue is who's going to win the next election.
If people of faith do want to get involved in the process and want to try to bring about some of the changes, the tempering of the rhetoric, you know, we've talked about themes of humility. There are also themes of charity, of not, in your book, of not thinking ill of other people simply because they disagree with you. How should they go about doing that? What would be a good first step if faithful people do want to change politics? How should they get started?
I think that that really the heart of the matter is going to be religious congregations and trying to rejuvenate or regenerate the significance of belonging to a congregation. I think that belonging to a congregation is the first step in trying to hold ourselves together, in trying to turn from just a concern about the self to concern about the greater good. And I think that for congregations to start thinking about what their ministry really is, and is it simply getting people to come through the door on Sunday morning, or is it something broader than that, is that would be a big thing.
You left the Senate 21 years ago. I guess technically it'd be 20 plus some change because you don't leave right until the first of the following year. Are there any parts of it you miss? And, you know, I'll ask it flatly. Do you think you could succeed in today's Senate, given the kind of atmosphere that you've talked about?
I can't imagine why anybody would want to be in it today. And I would not want to be in it today because what I tried to do in the Senate and what I enjoyed doing was legislating and seeing if it would be possible, at least incrementally, in making the country a little bit better. That's what you hope you're doing with legislation. But it's moving the ball down the field a yard or two. It's not scoring a touchdown on every play. And I enjoyed that process, and it had to be done on a bipartisan basis. It didn't work in any other way. And when I left it, I didn't leave it because I didn't like it. I left it because it was just time, as far as what I thought, it was time to go home. But today, Congress doesn't do anything. It's like a car that's broken down, and you put your key in the ignition, and the engine doesn't turn over. Nothing moves. Nothing gets done. So I don't see the point in being there today. And my hope is that we, the people, will demand from government something better than what we're getting now, and that we will show ourselves to be better than, I think, the impression we've given to politicians, that we are just selfish people concerned only about ourselves and demanding that nobody compromises on anything.
We've got just a couple of minutes left, and I want to get to this point. In the book, you write with real affection and reverence for the Senate and for some of the people within it, obviously also for the idea of public service. At a personal level, is it painful to you to see what the system has become?
Yeah, I think, it's not just personal pain, it's concern, because it's not functioning. And Congress is the place where we bring our differences and we address them and we try to work them out. That's what it's for. And it's not working. And if in the House of Representatives they can't even do something as small as electing a speaker, it's really not working. And this is a serious matter, and we've got to turn it around.
And I think that will have to be the last word. Senator Danforth, again, I enjoyed your book, and I really enjoyed talking with you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Certainly. And I should say that former United States Senator John Danforth will be in town this weekend talking about his book, The Relevance of Religion, How Faithful People Can Change Politics, at Trinity Episcopal Church. He'll also be taking part in services on Sunday. You can find more information about that on our website at WFYI.org. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. We look forward to talking with you again on Thursday. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.